Hi everyone, this is Lucy Bernholtz. I am the director of the Digital Civil Society Lab at Stanford University, and I'm joined on the line by my colleagues Laura Seaman and Heather Robinson from the Digital Civil Society Lab. We're delighted that you've joined us for this webinar about the RFP for the Digital Impact Grants. I'm going to go ahead and walk us through some basic information about the grants program, which I hope will answer most of your questions. And then Laura is going to take over for me, and we'll be taking in your questions and trying to answer them and throughout the course of this call. So let me give you a little bit of background information. Digital Impact is an initiative of the Digital Civil Society Lab. The lab itself is part of the Stanford Center on Philanthropy and Civil Society. Overall, our purpose is to work on and to improve the digital infrastructure for civil society, to help social sector practitioners and policymakers use digital resources safely, ethically, and effectively. And we have a number of different ways that we try to do that through the Digital Impact Initiative. There's an online community which is dedicated to the exchange of practical information about using data responsibly. We host a number of in-person events. We cultivate innovation and original research through the grants program, which we're here to talk about today. And we develop and share ready-to-use tools, policies, and resources for digital data governance in civil society. And you can find those, all of this information is at digitalimpact.org. The grants program, which is now in its third year, is focused specifically on the role of digital data and infrastructure to improve decision-making in philanthropy. We have a particular focus for this program on the role of individual givers in this ecosystem and are looking for projects and research that specifically are focused on how donors, individual givers, and others in civil society use and share digital data and infrastructure as part of their work. We're trying to support research, prototypes, and shared learning that help donors and civil society organizations use digital data safely, ethically, and effectively. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the two different types of grants that the program makes. There's two different strands of grant. There's one on research and one which we call the sector initiative. And there's some slightly different eligibility requirements for those two different types of grants. So the research grants in particular are for academic teams that are exploring questions of scholarly interest and then have practical applications for people in the social sector or for scholarly review of existing practice. This scholarship can come from any academic discipline, and we're always interested in seeing proposals from cross-disciplinary teams, especially given the nature of the questions we face about digital data and civil society. For the sector grants, eligible applicants include nonprofits and partners who might be academics who are working on things that affect the sector writ large. The priority is always given to projects that align with the four principles for digital data use, as outlined on the digitalimpact.org and digitalimpact.io sites. Those four principles are permission, privacy, openness, and pluralism, and you can find much more information about them on the digitalimpact.io site, which is where the policy toolkit can be found. We have a total budget for this grant cycle of $200,000. We estimate and anticipate that we'll make somewhere between 5 and 10 grants. That's in line with what we've done each of the last 2 years. These are one-year grants, and we expect that they will work should begin in the late fall of this year. All right, let me clarify that in fact the grants will be awarded in late fall of this year. Sometimes successful applicants are already, the work is already underway. So, but the grants themselves run from fall of 2018 to fall of 2019. And again, there's a total of $200,000 available for grants in this cycle. One of the key requirements for grantees is that they be willing to make your findings and your innovations publicly available according to the open access policy of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The Gates Foundation is the funder of this initiative, and their open access policy can be found at the link that you now see on your screen at gatesfoundation.org. If you're applying for this funding, your outputs, either the research and or the prototypes or learning materials or whatever it is you produce, have to be made available under the terms of this policy. So if this isn't something that aligns with the way you're trying to do your work, this isn't the grant pool for you. In addition to that absolute requirement, we have some additional requirements for engagement where, because we're always trying to build the digital impact community and expand the global participation, we encourage and anticipate that successful applicants will contribute to that community. That's usually in the form of some form of webinar or blog posting or ways that we try to amplify your work and share it with the community. So a lot of different opportunities for that. And then there's also a basic grant report, both narrative and budgeting, that's due to us in the fall of 2019 so that we can be held accountable for the funding. There is a deadline coming up. It's at the end of next month. June 25th is the deadline to apply, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we will be notifying grant recipients in August. If you've got questions, there are now some URLs up on your website, up on your screen, that where you can access the RFP. It's at digitalimpact.org, and you'll find the RFP for 2018 up there. You're welcome to ask us questions by email at hello@digitalimpact.org. And you can also see a list of past grantees at digitalimpact.org grants. This webinar is one of two that we've run for this cycle of grants. There's an FAQ that we keep up on digitalimpact.org where you can get your questions checked there to see if some questions you have may have already been asked and answered. And now I'm going to turn this over to Laura Seaman, the program manager for the Digital Civil Society Lab, to ask any other, to answer any other questions you may have. Laura?
Yeah, thanks, Lucy. Hope everyone can hear me okay. As Lucy mentioned, you are welcome to ask questions really at any time, including after this webinar, either by email at hello@digitalimpact.org, right now in the webinar via the chat function, and even directly on social media. Our handle for Digital Impact is at DGTLImpact, and we'll do our best to respond there to direct messages. So I see a couple of questions coming in. We'll let those come in. In the meantime, I just wanted to fill in a few additional points from the slides that Lucy reviewed. You'll see there was a slide with suggested topics, or really just ideas or prompts for topics. And those are, of course, only suggestions, and you'll find even more ideas and parameters in the full RFP if you follow the link in Lucy's last slide to digitalimpact.org. There are, since the last call, if you joined us, I think on May 10th for the first Q&A call, there have been a number of developments, including that we have been publishing profiles and highlight pages of some of the 2016 cohort, the first cohort that we awarded of digital impact grants. And so there were a few questions last time, for example, about some of the specifics of those projects, what types of outputs came out of those, et cetera, some of the details of the collaborations that we funded there. And so you'll find that now if you follow the link again to digitalimpact.org. To the grants page, if you navigate to the 2016 cohort, you'll find more details than were there a few weeks ago. So hopefully that gives you some better sense of the types of projects that we have funded in the past, as well as how those have gone and what some of the outputs and outcomes have been. And the 2017 cohort is still in progress, but you'll see some updates from them soon as well. So let's dive into some of the questions here. And again, you can ask these directly in the GoToWebinar platform if you're logging in by the computer. We had a question about from an international organization outside of the U.S. asking for what we mean by 501c3 status or equivalency. 501c3 is the sort of tax classification for your average nonprofit here in the United States. And we do, as Lucy mentioned, give grants internationally starting from last year and again this year. And so we do invite organizations from outside the U.S. to apply, and we encourage them to apply. And we are going to look at the equivalency status. So if your organization is registered as a charity or a nonprofit in another country, we've given you a couple of options just in the application form itself to indicate the status of your organization, including if you have a DUNS number, a bridge number, etc. There are a few choices there on the application form. And if you don't have one of those, that's okay. We would ask that you actually just get in touch with us directly so that we can hear a little bit more about your organization and, you know, check in on the Stanford side about what is and is not eligible. So please just get in touch if you fall into a category where you're not sure if your organization counts as a nonprofit. And that goes also for research teams looking to apply for one of the research grants. We've had a few questions from organizations that are not necessarily universities, but, for example, independent think tanks that do research but aren't affiliated with a university. And it depends on a couple of things. One is just the nature of the project, whether it's research or sector advancement focused, and we realize that's somewhat of a gray area in some cases. And then the other factor there is what type of organization it is and who is the lead, if it's a collaboration, what's the recipient organization, if it's a coalition of multiple orgs. So if there's any doubt, any confusion about those eligibility requirements, please just be in touch sooner rather than later so that we can be sure to give you some clarity before you fill out an application. And then this is a note for Lucy. We've had a request to please go back to the screen about the focus of the grants for the third cycle. Okay, so please keep those questions coming. I have a few that we have collected since the last Q&A webinar earlier in May. Again, one of them was about this difference between research and sector advancement grants, which, as I mentioned, depends both on the type of organization, but also the type of the project and the type of work that's to be undertaken and what outputs you anticipate. So do be in touch with us about that. We did have a question recently about ways to apply for the grant outside of using the online platform that we've selected, which is SlideRoom. And we would like to offer that if that is of interest to anyone, we are happy to provide you with just a plain document that you can fill out, like a regular form, along with a budget template in the form of an Excel doc so that you don't have to use the online platform. So please just get in touch with us if this is something that you're interested in. A similar question from last time, actually, about the type of organization is that, in addition to these questions about different types of research organizations, for example, a think tank versus a university, we've had questions about B Corps and international equivalents of kind of social impact organizations that fall outside of the typical scope of nonprofits in whatever country. And again, I just ask that you please get in touch with us sooner rather than later so we can help you navigate those parameters. And then in terms of research grants, a great question recently was, can the PI, the principal investigator, on a research grant, if it is from a university, can that be a research staff member, for example, a research scholar, versus a full faculty member? And so the question, or the answer, excuse me, is that from the perspective of Stanford, it's okay with us, but we encourage you to check your own university's rules about who can be a PI. Okay, agree. Yeah, we have a good question about whether I can apply for a research grant with a university that this person is affiliated with, and then also separately for a sector award for implementation. So that's a great question, and I'm taking this to mean that this would be for sort of different stages or different parts of the same project. And I would encourage you to get in touch with us with a few more details about that, but my sense is that we would award one, not both of those, just given the limited pool of funds and also the you know, the small size of the grant pool in terms of number of awards that we've made the last few years. But please get in touch. So we have a question here that asks, is there a restriction on funding projects that have similarities to previous projects developed in other countries? That's a great question. We are looking to fund things that are new and also broadly applicable. So those are two things, two parameters that really get at the idea that we want to fund things that are going to help move the sector forward, especially for, you know, sector advancement grants for if you're developing tools. So what we're not looking to do, for example, is to just replicate something that already exists and apply it to another geographic context. But again, you're welcome to send us some more details about what you have in mind, and we can give you a kind of a more concrete answer there. Bear with us as we sort through these questions. Thank you for everyone who's asking a question and who submitted questions by email. Again, I think Lucy mentioned this a few minutes ago, but we will take these questions that are really broadly relevant from this Q&A session, as well as from what we're getting right now by email and social media, and we'll weave some of those into the Q&A document that's currently on the Digital Impact site. And so you'll find that at digitalimpact.org when you navigate to the grants portal. There's a link to a Q&A doc that we've been fleshing out over the past two rounds, and we will continue to build that out. There's a great question here. So someone was very observant on the slides and picked up that this is a sub-grant arrangement. So from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to Stanford University, we're now making sub-awards. Digital Impact is an initiative of the Digital Civil Society Lab at Stanford PAC. So the question here is, if my organization has another grant or another request submitted, let's say to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, are you still eligible to apply? And the answer is yes. Thank you for asking. Another question about, can you apply for more than one? I'm not sure if that means in this cycle or if you have applied before, can you apply again? The answer to the second one is yes, of course. If you've applied before and haven't been successful, you're very welcome to reapply. We encourage you to. In terms of, can you apply more than once? Technically, yes, you can submit more than one application. You can also be a partner organization on multiple applications for different projects. It's highly unlikely, given the small cohorts the last 2 years, that we would fund an organization for two separate projects if we're looking at making only 5 to 10 awards. But we have had organizations submit multiple proposals in the past, and there's no restriction on that. So thanks for your question there. We have a good question, I think, getting at the kind of international nature of the grants. Is there any preference for the type of location? I assume that means either that the work will be carried out in, or the sort of intended area that something would be applied to. And no, so there's no geographic regional preference. It may seem like there was in our first cohort, and that's only because we weren't yet allowed to make international grants. So they were very US focused in 2016. And you'll see the 2017 cohort was much more international. So no, we're not looking for a specific geographic focus, either the location of the team executing the work or the intended application. We are looking for things that are not extremely regionally specific and that can be used, as we've said, broadly across the social sector or learned from, at least across the social sector. So something geared toward a very specific geographic area that's not replicable or scalable or really has shared learnings more broadly would probably not be the most attractive. And then we also, so a similar question, I think, with the same, from the same attendee is there a specific context or topic or field, I think is the right word. And for example, humanitarian conflict, natural disaster, et cetera. And again, no, we have not set a specific sort of subsector within the social sector. These are supposed to be very broad. Yes, so there's a question here about other funding source. Yeah, so if you've already stepped through the application process, you'll have seen that there is an Excel document attached that you download and fill out and then re-upload. And we've put it into what we hope is a simple and easy to use template. If you have any trouble with that, please let us know right away. But one of the items there, and I think it's referenced on the application form as well, is other sources of funding for the project. And so to reiterate what Lucy mentioned, we're looking to fund either new projects that haven't started yet, but also we're very open to funding in progress projects. So the next stage of work and something that's already in progress. And both of those might entail that there's extra or additional funding already in place. That's great. We don't have a specific preference for whether or not there's extra funding. We're just trying to get a sense of the overall size and scope and also stage of the project. So don't feel that having other funding will either help or hinder you. It's more for us to just get a big picture of the scope of work and how it's moving forward. Thanks again for your patience here. We've got a lot of great questions coming in. We're just trying to sort through them. So there's a more of a specific sort of scenario that we've been posed. One is that there's an international NGO that works with the Department of Education in their country. And the idea for the project is to scale and apply and analyze a program, including working with the public school system. And would the process to implement something it sounds like is already in progress, or to scale something, be applicable for a grant? I think that carries on to what I mentioned just before, that yes, we're very open to looking at the next stage of scaling or implementing or refining a project that has already happened. If in fact the question was about whether working with a public school system is within the scope of the grant, I would say yes, we're open to that. Okay, so lots of specific questions about projects. We'll do our best to address those on this call. We may not be able to get to all of them, but we're very welcome to get an email from you and sort through some of those details on a case-by-case basis. So one of the questions here, it sounds like, is from a nonprofit organization that is looking at undertaking a research project. And I'm not sure if the question is about what type of grant sector advancement versus research you would apply to, or the specific nature of the project, but I would refer back to what we mentioned about what falls under research versus sector advancement. And it's a combination of type of organization, also type of project. It also might depend on whether for the research portion you're working with a university partner or another type of research org. Okay, we'll give you a few more minutes to keep submitting questions. We'll stay on as long as questions are coming in until 12 o'clock Pacific time. And then just remember, you can reach out at any time by email, even by social media, if you don't get a chance to ask your question, or if maybe you're having to log off soon. So then again, a question about the priorities in terms of the thematic areas of interest. Someone's mentioning that in the RFP, we referenced the four principles of digital data use that you'll find on the lab's website, digitalimpact.io. That's our digital impact toolkit, as well as six thematic areas, that we've also articulated in this year's RFP that's new from last year. And again, those are really just meant to prompt your thinking, and to give examples of the types of questions that we're asking here at the lab and that we're interested in exploring through the Digital Impact Initiative. So please don't take those as hard parameters that you can't submit a project outside of, but they're more meant to prompt your thinking. There's a question here, does a project that builds on data science tools in order to better use data to address, for example, vulnerable populations, would that fall within the parameters? There's nothing in there that makes me think that it wouldn't. And it sounds like the question is, does the project need to analyze existing tools, or can it focus on building tools? And that might actually get to the kind of research versus sector advancement question. So I'd want to know a little bit more about the type of organization, who's the team executing this project. So feel free to reach out about that. But yes, building new tools is certainly within the scope of this grant's RFP. So great question here about, do we have a list of budget line items that are prohibited? That is a really good question. And we actually should probably work this into the Q&A doc. So thank you very much to whoever asked that question. We don't have a list of budget items that we've articulated or posted that are prohibited. We can certainly provide that. We haven't gotten any or many applications that have things that aren't allowable under the terms of this grant, although I'm sure there are some. So thanks again. We'll be clear about that in the RFP and on the budget template. We'll get that updated in the next day or two. A question we do get a lot about the budgets is whether salaries are included, and the answer is absolutely yes. People are the ones who make these projects happen. And so both staff salaries for the core team, as well as sort of freelance and consulting fees, those are all things that we have funded in the past, and that's definitely allowable. We also tend to get a question about the indirect cost limit, which is set at 10%. And if you have questions about that, please let us know soon. And that's total for all the line items in a proposed budget. And then again, if you are at the stage of the application where you're working on the budget, please just note that we do ask you to elaborate on additional funding and to give us a sense of kind of what the request for this RFP or for this grant is in the grand scheme of the whole project. Yes, and Heather, thank you. I'm very glad she's sitting next to me. Heather reminds us that we should be sure, even if you're submitting from an international organization outside the U.S., to please put the budget in terms of U.S. dollars and do that conversion before you submit. Thanks for that. Yeah, we have a question here more specific about line items. Again, thanks to who brought this topic up. This is important. About capital expenses in terms of construction, we're going to have to get back to you on that. Okay, and while we wait for a few more questions, again, we'll stick around till you don't have any more. Just a reminder, we've seen from a few folks that they tuned in late and may have missed a few points from earlier, and we do want to remind you that the profile pages for the 2016 cohort, the first cohort that we funded, are now up. Most of them are up, at least, on digitalimpact.org to hopefully give you a better sense of the scope and the type and the outcomes of some of the projects that we've been funding. You'll also find short profiles of the 2017 cohort, so you'll be able to see, for example, the organization. In some cases, they're collaboratives of multiple organizations, and a kind of high-level view of the scope of the project. And then, again, if you've already dug into the application form, you'll have seen that we have an extra checkbox that gives you the option to opt in. If you'd like to include your project high-level details like, the one-line summary that we ask for, the title of the project, the lead organization, those sorts of things in a bigger list of organizations. And so our hope is that this grant program will continue in the years to come and that we'll be able to publish a list of applications received as well as applications funded with a few high-level details to help give sort of the sector a better sense of what's happening and also funders a sense of where the demand is. And so you have the option to either opt in or opt out. The default is to opt out. But if you do feel comfortable having the project details, again, just the high level ones included, we'd love to include that list and publish it after the awards have been made. And you'll be able to look back now actually on the site to see all the submitted projects from orgs that have opted in both 2016 and 2017. Yeah, we've had another sort of specific question about what type of project is eligible. It's great to already see some of these ideas articulated. A question has come in about what a project based on advising NGOs how to use their data responsibly could be eligible. And in fact, if you look back at the last couple of cohorts, I think you may see an aspect of that in a few of the different projects, including the Good Data Collaborative, which was a coalition of four organizations. They kind of got at that in one specific way. And so that certainly falls within the scope of the type of work that we like to see. Again, just to reiterate from 5 or 10 minutes ago that we are not looking to replicate things that exist or apply them to a new geographic area necessarily. But responsible data use by NGOs is well within the scope of the Digital Impact Initiative in general and this grants program in particular. Logistical question. Is hello@digitalimpact.org the correct email address to reach out to? Yes, please. Please email us. That'll come directly to our team, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can by email. Great question here from someone who says they've developed a concept that feels well aligned with this RFP, and can they send along a draft for feedback. The question specifically asks a summary paragraph for feedback. I appreciate that. Yes. So given the scope or the size of the application pool that we've gotten, at least last time, we had about 100 applications. We aren't able to give very detailed feedback on a full proposal before it's submitted, but we would be happy to review a summary paragraph, including if there are specific questions about eligibility, organization type parameters, et cetera. Of course, we can't say, yes, this would be funded, no, this would be funded. We do have an external review process, but we're happy to give kind of a gut check in terms of eligibility. So please be feel free to send that along again to hello@digitalimpact.org, and we will respond to you as soon as possible, including if we just have some follow-up questions for more clarity. We have a question here that I'd love more clarity on for whoever asked it, which is what aspects are going to be taken into consideration for the sector? Are there any restrictions? If you'd like to follow up with us either in the chat box or just by email with what you mean by aspects for the sector or restrictions, I'd be happy to try to answer that. Another question, you know, having looked back at some of the outcomes and profiles of the past grantees, one participant says that they're an organization's project has some overlap with her idea, but the use is different. Should I still apply? And that's something that I think we'd be happy to give a little bit more feedback on by email if we can get some more details. We aren't looking to just replicate things over and over that have already been funded or that already exist. We are trying to use these resources wisely, but that doesn't mean that there can be no thematic overlap or people can't develop the same types of tools or resources that maybe get at it from different angles. So feel free to be in touch with us. And then a couple of other housekeeping details. We've mentioned how to get in touch with us. We've mentioned how to learn a bit more about the past grantees that we funded in the last few cohorts and how to view the full proposal, which has more details and ideas and sort of conceptual and thematic suggestions, not necessarily parameters. And that RFP will also have a link that you'll also find on the application form and was in Lucy's slides to the Gates Open Access Policy. And so I encourage you to review that. These are subawards from the Gates Foundation to Stanford and then beyond. And they do fall under the Open Access Policy. You can find those details online or in the slides. Okay, Heather is helping me scan through these questions here. Keep them coming. We'll wait a few more minutes. Oh, yeah, that's good. So we have a great question here about the level of priority, I guess, that the team here is giving to projects that collaborate with multiple partners. If you review the past two cohorts, you'll see there's a collection of kind of single organization projects and collaboratives, including that Good Data Collaborative that I've mentioned from 2016. We do have a preference for collaborations to a degree because we feel that especially if it's a research team collaborating with organizations from the social sector, we feel like that increases the chances of something being grounded in practice and also broadly applicable. We don't have a requirement that a project be collaborative. And as you'll see, we have funded just single organization projects in the past. So again, you're welcome to reach out with a few more details about the specific project. But to the extent we do have a priority for collaboration, it is based on that desire to increase the relevance and the applicability and the uptake of a project and its outcomes. So thanks again for all your great questions. If you're tuning in just in the last few minutes, a reminder that we're taking a lot of these great questions we're getting and weaving them into the Q&A document that you'll find on the digitalimpact.org site. So you'll be able to refer to those going forward. I should also mention that we'll have a recording of this webinar up on the site very soon, within a day or two, we hope. As well as eventually a transcript of the information and the questions that we've answered on this call. And if you're really just tuning in, another reminder that the deadline is June 25th. That is a Monday, if I'm not mistaken. And the deadline, importantly, is 5 p.m. Pacific time. So if you're in another time zone, please make a big note of that as you work on your application. And we don't expect there to be an extension. So there was a question here about, looking at outcomes across multiple years, I think was the gist of the question. And as Lucy mentioned in her slides, the scope of the grant is a year, but we've also mentioned that we're very open to funding, the next stage of a project that's already in progress and that might span even multiple years or longer after the grant period. And so that 1 year period, just to be clear, is really just for the scope of this award. And if it's part of a larger project, we're very happy to have that continue. We don't internally measure outcomes or outputs as part of this grant for future years as things continue. But as Lucy mentioned, we do try to use the Digital Impact platform to really amplify the outcomes and outputs of this work, both through the blog and the virtual roundtable series, as well as the digital impact toolkit that are all part of this digital impact initiative package. And so we are committed to, you know, helping to promote the work that comes out of these grants even after that 1 year period has ended. It looks like we might have a few other questions coming in, so we'll hold on for a few more minutes. Okay, while we wait for one or two more, just to recap again, if you're joining us recently, these slides that Lucy's gone over will be available online, as well as the recording of this webinar. We're going to work these questions into the Q&A document that you can already look at based on the past 2 years. You can go ahead and take a look through the application form if you've already accessed that. Get back to us with any questions. Please review the Gates Open Access Policy, the budget template, and get back to us soon with any questions about the logistics of applying or your eligibility or even the content or thematic parameters of a project. Again, we're not able to review full proposals before they go in, but we are happy to take a look at, a short summary of a project or specific questions about organization type or a collaboration or questions about what types of outputs fit into this. We do have a couple coming in, so I'll just hold off for a second. There's a question that actually I think we got another version of on the last webinar as well about whether the project should be focused on civil society or the benefit of civil society or the general public. And we had that question last time. And so the answer is the former. So we are looking for research and projects and new knowledge that will help the social sector specifically to advance that, you know, that's a part of civil society. And so we are looking at not just things that are sort of for the average citizen or members of the general public to use, but specifically geared toward nonprofit and social sector organizations or the role of civil society specifically. I hope that's helpful. Okay, it looks like the questions are winding up a little here, so I think we'll go ahead and get ready to close. I do want to remind everyone the full RFP is online. Applications are open. They are due at 5 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, June 25th. So please make a note of that. Make sure to get in any questions about eligibility, about content, about budget specifically for sure, to us as soon as possible. And you can do that in a number of ways, including by email, hello@digitalimpact.org. That'll come right to us. Or a social media, we're at DGTLImpact, @DGTLImpact. And then you can find a summary and some project highlights coming out of the 2016 cohort, as well as some summaries of the 2017 cohort projects on digitalimpact.org on the grants portal. You can also find a Q&A doc where a lot of these questions will be added in the coming days. You'll find a recording of this webinar posted online shortly, as well as a transcript. So we'll try to give you as much information as possible to help you prepare your proposal. And then again, if you have specific questions, please let us know. So I think that we are going to go ahead and close. I don't see any more questions coming in. So thanks very much for tuning in. Thank you so much for your questions, including the ones that have come in the last few weeks by email. Please keep those coming. This really helps us refine the process from cohort to cohort. And we look forward to reading about your projects and seeing your proposals. Thanks very much.